the writer director of the film wanted to make it was to make it feel like it was happening in the present and it reflected the present. And that was through the tools of filmmaking, cinematography, acting, music, sound design, to create this immersive feeling of present tenseness, which was a means to an hopeful end, which was to reflect us in the present. And John's also spoken about how it's a political film. And one of the things that's happening in the present is this extraordinary, staggering loss of innocent life in killing of innocent people in Gaza and in the occupied territories that is a response to the heinous mass killing of October the 7th. But it just seems very stark in the world that we have politically, our governments at least, have a different level of care and attitude to those innocent people being killed in Gaza and in Yemen, and of course in other, you know, this selective empathy, I think, marks hundreds of years of human history, and I mentioned that in the I spoke to that in the brief speech I was able to make, and isn't just something that was happening in from 1940 to 45 in Germany. So all of those things sort of came together in that moment, in that speech.
And James Wilson, you mentioned the commandant and of Auschwitz and his family. What was the challenge in getting the audience to identify with these main characters, with this idyllic family, up against this incomprehensible terror and destruction that was happening that was occurring and that he was presiding over?
Well, I mean, in a way, the challenge that you identify sort of is the core of the film, I think. The questions of the film, I mean, it's not a polemical film. There's not like a message where we're trying to pin it, tie it up with a neat bow. But I think the whole question of the film and the idea, the thinking space of the film, it's a film, I think, that asks you to, tries to make a space in which you can think, was to lean into some kind of identification with those people, the commandant of Auschwitz and his partner, his wife, to look for the similarities, not the differences. The typical way the Holocaust is narrated is of it's the discourse of what's called Holocaust exceptionalism, right? That the Holocaust stands apart from history, outside of history, as this sort of mythic, almost evil, mystical event. And there's something apolitical and ahistorical in that idea. So mm-hmm. The idea of this film was to look for the similarities rather than the differences between us and the perpetrator.
And I wanted to go to a clip from your film when Nazi Commandant Rudolf Haas's wife, Hedwig Hensel, speaks to her mother.
Is that the camp wall?
Yes, that's the camp wall. We planted more vines at the back to grow and cover it.
Maybe Esther Silverman is over there.
Which one was she?
The one I used to clean for.
James Wilson, 10 seconds to wrap.
Well, I mean, just to pick up that last point, it was to look for all those details and aspects of our lives in terms of our aspirations, our desire for household comfort, the things that motivated and drove them.
James Wilson, we're
going to
leave it there. Congratulations on your Oscar nominations for international film at the Oscars, The Zone of Interest. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3. My name's Anthony Cacciato, and you're listening to The Angry Young Man. Now, just a quick reminder before we get into the mix of things today. Everything that's said on this program is not necessarily representative of the views of WRCT or its members, strictly those of myself and the wonderful guest I have on today. Now that that is out of the way, let's roll right into that. Now, today I have a good friend of mine, Zach Berger, fellow libertarian, here to talk a little bit about the liberty movement. This is a little thing I've been floating around for a little bit with him, just kind of being like, hey, you know, there is a liberty movement, to kind of see where do we go with this? You know, like, there's the ideas, we have these strongly held beliefs. How exactly do these get enacted? But before I get into that, just like to welcome you onto the show, Zach. Thank you for coming on.
Thank you so much for having me, Anthony. I really appreciate it.
Yes, I mean, you, like myself, are a libertarian. How did you find yourself in this peculiar position? I mean, you're among the wonderful 2-3% national vote in the presidential election. I mean, you know, it was an interesting sort of journey for me, kind of moving from like 2016, like rah, 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 Trump to kind of throughout COVID, a more mellow, like, well, maybe the government shouldn't be doing this. And eventually, you know, moving into the libertarian sphere. But tell us a little bit about how you kind of entered that.
So, I mean, really, it's a similar experience. Dissatisfaction, I guess, is the best way to express it. I felt dissatisfied with the way the current politics of our nation was going. I definitely have that same trajectory of rah, rah, rah in 2016, and then realizing, hey, this isn't going right. I don't like these people. I don't like these parties. There's got to be somewhere that I fit in with really that really aligns with how I envision our government should be, and I found the Liberty Movement.
So what was kind of like your gateway liberty movement thing?
Well, I mean, let's see. The dysfunction definitely hit something home for me. The absolute dysfunction of our government made me realize, you know, something's wrong. And then I started researching, and then I came into all these great texts and theorists, and I really was like, this is where I belong. Definitely after, like, the second impeachment of Trump, where I was like, our government just doesn't know what it's doing. It needs to take a step back.
Yeah, I mean, like, in a similar way, I think for most people that COVID and the subsequent events of the 2020 election were kind of just a moment where people stood back and were like, what is going on? You know, like, you know, the entire Trump presidency was kind of a what is going on moment for a lot of people. But for a lot of people, it didn't really – I mean, we kind of had an era of good feelings almost through the early Trump presidency, where you saw, you know, like high economic growth, low prices, cutting of taxes. And someone who is – you know, like the primers for being a libertarian are already there. You know, you believe in limited government. You believe in a free economy. These are things that, you know, like the Republican Party says that it is the party of, and we'll kind of get a little bit more into this in a little bit. But kind of something that was turned on its head through the Trump presidency was the limited government, free enterprise mindset of the party. That kind of saw itself just almost evaporate, which to me that's concerning. That we see some party that's supposed to be the vanguard of that just fall apart in front of our eyes.
Yeah, no, absolutely. What the Republican Party stood for in 2016 is not what the Republican Party of today stands for, and certainly not midway through Trump's presidency. You know, there was some great promise of sticking to that platform and that mindset, But yeah, you're right. Absolutely. By 2018, 2019, that whole vision had really just completely collapsed. And what we were left with was a borderline authoritarian outlook for the Republican Party that I think a lot of its supporters share. And that just does not align with where I think our politics should be.
Well, I mean, kind of, you know, we're kind of beating around the bush, dancing around the major thing here, which is, you know, what I wanted to bring you on to talk about is, you know, we have the Liberty Movement. There's a growing dissatisfaction among people of both allegiances, Republican and Democrat, that are moving towards kind of being more independent, but not necessarily libertarian. But for the most part, do hold some fairly libertarian beliefs. You know, where exactly do you see the Liberty Movement manifesting itself in governmental action? I mean, do you you know, we talk about the Republican Party being this traditional vanguard of limited government, free enterprise, the Barry Goldwater Republican Party, because you still have people in the party like Rand Paul, Thomas Massey. Who are really kind of still pushing this very, like, base level, constitutional, like, just the government that we have was founded to operate this way with certain restrictions and for this explicit purpose. And, I mean, it's still definitely something that's around, but – and I'm curious if you see the presence of those – viewpoints still in the party as a way by which maybe once the populist movement of the 2010s kind of maybe dies down, if that's something that could reemerge out of it, or is the Republican Party too far gone at this point? What do you think?
It's doomed, plain and simple. I mean, I would love to have hope that one of the two major political parties on our spectrum is moving toward the right path, but it absolutely isn't, especially the modern Republican Party. I mean, I know figures like Rand Paul do exist, and I greatly admire their stance and views, but they're in the minority of what most Republicans are nowadays and what the Republican being a Republican represents. And I think it's either going to come to a point where those figures will retire from politics and the Republican Party will be completely left in the hands of a certain cadre of people, or they'll simply leave the Republican Party once it gets to a point where they can no longer tolerate how it's functioning. How I see the Libertarian Party manifesting, how I see us getting support, we need to be advertising really what we are, because when you think about what the Libertarian Party represents for people, it's not that far off from where most major parties have on certain viewpoints. I like to think a lot of what we advocate for is in the middle of the traditional political spectrum. You know, free civil liberties for all is what is highly thought of nowadays, and which is crazy to me, is a very, very traditional Democratic Party standpoint. But free enterprise and deregulation is very traditionally Republican. And, you know, we combine those economic views and those civil liberties views, and you have a party that's kind of more in the middle than most people will give it credit for and think about. And I think that's the way we reach some of those newly independent voters.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, you know, like, people, I don't know if I necessarily agree with the description that people give libertarians when they call them fiscally conservative and socially liberal. Because, I mean, it kind of captures it. I don't think it does justice to what really the libertarians are advocating for, but it does kind of address, like, that, well, there's a little bit of this that caters towards a more left-leaning group of people and something that caters towards a more right-leaning group of people. But kind of where I would draw this back to, you know, maybe we could still hold on hope for the Republican Party is libertarianism in at least most applications. I mean, you have left libertarianism, but a lot of libertarians in the United States are right libertarians, people who believe in that, you know, classical liberalism, which is the foundation of a lot of libertarian ideology. Adam Smith, John Locke, your liberal of the time thinkers are proposing what we would consider to be conservative viewpoints in the modern sense. A lot of what liberals in the 1800s were advocating for, you know, a lot of the quote-unquote liberal ideology that created the basis for the United States is fundamentally conservative nowadays in a lot of ways, save for, you know, applying it in a more consistent way, which has the side effect of creating what some would call liberal policies nowadays. You know, you talk about, say, for example, deregulation of the drug market, you know, legalization of marijuana, for example, or looking to provide a right to gay marriage, for example. Things that are considered liberal viewpoints, but are really in practice just uniform, consistent practicing of the ideal of limited government. You know, and I think that if it, given enough time, you know, there are definitely, there's a fork in the road that we're at right now with the Republican Party. Will it stay true to what it is at the core? Is this kind of just like a wind of change moment? Because, I mean, you had Teddy Roosevelt, for example, who was a staunch progressive in the Republican Party and shaped Republican policy for a decent chunk of time before you had the Coolidge administration, the Hoover administration. There were fairly progressive policies in the Republican Party, and you had liberal Republicans like Nelson Rockefeller, for example, the Rockefeller Republicans. These kind of winds of change happen within the parties and definitely can affect where it goes, but there's a solid chance that this populist streak might just be a faction which, while vocal and loud at the moment, doesn't really live longer than the next 10, 20 years, potentially dying off with Donald Trump. What do you think?
I mean, I'd certainly love to have that as my viewpoint. I love the optimism we're showing in this booth here today. But, I mean, yes, I could very well die off with Trump. I don't want to get rid of that possibility altogether, to throw that out. But you have figures like Marjorie Taylor Greene and Lauren Boebert, who might get primaried, but and others.
Who knows?
Yeah, right? Who knows? But you have figures like that who are still young in their prime, and they attract a lot of attention. I mean, we all know how their politics works. Their politics is create a scene, be disrespectful, get on the news, get more engagement, and their constituents eat that up. And people like that will only continue to emerge and grow. So I agree Trump started it, and I agree once Trump is out of the picture, maybe it'll feel different for them. But I don't think their style of politics that they bring to the Republican Party is going to be going anywhere anytime soon.
Well, while it might not disappear, it will definitely – it has a chance to take a back seat because – yes, there are these figures, you know, your Freedom Caucus individuals who are advocating for this MAGA agenda, but they represent fairly red constituencies. Their only challengers are in primaries. They could get primaried, theoretically, but once they get to a general election, they're about as safe as Summer Lee is facing up against a Republican in PA's 12th.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's one of those things where the political dynamics are strictly based on, well, what type of Republican are we going to have representing us? Mm-hmm. When you have more moderate districts, you have different Republicans that are representing them. You know, there's some things that kind of stick from the national agenda. You know, you'll have – I saw this in the news today. There was the banning of transgender women from – playing in women's sports in Nassau County, New York. And Nassau County Congressman Anthony Desposito backed that up. And, you know, he said, like, you know, this is a good thing. And I'm not going to provide value judgment to whether or not that's, you know, a good or a bad thing at the moment. But, you know, it's you'll see even the moderate areas still kind of reflecting the national attitude. And the question really then becomes, you know, who's going to dominate that national attitude? And I think that people ebb and flow from one to the other over time. I don't think that we've seen a consistent national attitude among Republicans or Democrats when they're in power, and how that kind of disseminates itself into the messaging of congresspeople, senators, or even local officials.
Well, here's what I'll say about that, right? Is it in those primary challenges to those outspoken people, who's going to be, and even if they do get primaried and they, and that primary challenger does go on to win because it's a safe bet, I still believe that there'll always be more outspoken people to take their place in other districts. And I think the thing is, you're saying, you know, there's this balance, there's this inner competition between the moderates and the MAGA hardliners, right? Well, who's always going to be the most vocal out of that group? Who is always going to dominate the limelight? So I would counter with saying that even if those particular figures aren't there, there'll be other figures who are always going to represent what that side of the Republican Party. And they're always going to be the more dominant people because, right, the moderates, that's not their style. Their style is not to create national news every other day. The hardliners, that's what they want. That's how they get attention. That's their fix, right?
Do you think that there's a positive way of, say, for example, you have a growing libertarian streak in the Republican Party? For up-and-coming libertarian Republicans, do you think that it's possible to stir attention in a positive way to the movement? In the similar way, I think Ron Paul was able to potentially do this in his time as a Texas congressman, or when he ran for president in 2012 especially. He was able to create a lot of national attention around libertarian issues within the Republican Party. Do you think that potentially you could see something of equal magnitude arising from a libertarian wing if it were to grow in the Republican Party?
I mean, the fact is, for me, I don't really want it to. I distinctly believe in the separation. Unless the Republicans can radically change their agenda in the coming years, I'd say that all libertarians have a place to go, that they already can express those beliefs and exercise their political action. And I'd advocate going there before I'd advocate trying to stick in a party that is actively advocating for a large amount of things that go against what the libertarian viewpoint is. And I think it's just noting that difference that's really crucial. I know, of course, that some libertarian candidates don't perform the best, but I believe there is significant headway. If you look at Chase Oliver in the Georgia Senate election, right, who is going to be the presidential candidate this
likely
year?
He's leading in the libertarian primary at the moment.
I mean, he still created waves, you know. It wasn't, of course, it was I don't even remember. Was it Warnock versus
Warnock and Herschel Walker?
Oh, that yeah.
Yeah, he triggered the runoff in that election,
and that's important to note. That shows strides, you know. And Georgia is such a weird cockamamie political state now. But even so, if just to show that we've been able to do that there and make that little bit of impact means we're moving in the right direction, and you're gonna keep seeing things like that. I believe in this national election, there'll be a handful of libertarians that will make up and show a significant part of the voting electorate. And I believe in the coming national elections that will only continue to grow. And am I saying we're ever going to get a libertarian president? Probably not. But we're going to show ourselves, and I think we're going to start making more waves and get more credit from people, get the credit from people that we deserve.
Well, you know, it kind of what it boils down to is how do we look at what is defined as a successful libertarian party in the United States? If we're not looking at the potential of managing to win, say, a presidential election, I mean, you look at 2016, the highest vote share that a libertarian candidate ever got in a presidential election, Gary Johnson running and getting 3.3% of the national popular vote. It was a success for the Libertarian Party, and you know, they've had smaller successes to electing mayors. I'm trying to remember which city it was. There was a Midwestern state that had a mayor elected who's Libertarian, and you know, there's the potential for growing the Liberty Caucus. We'll put it that way, but you know. Is it feasible within the current system that we have, or do you think it requires more radical change to the election system to really make a successful Libertarian Party.
So that's, you know, I mean, obviously the system is rigged. The system is rigged so that it's a two-party system, and both parties want to keep it that way, in my personal opinion. I believe it's in systematically designed to keep third parties out of the race and to make it harder for them to succeed. But I think we really have to look at this election first, because think about it. In 2016, we got, what, you said 3.3%?
3.3, yes.
All right. Think about it. The reason we got so many votes is because people were thinking, wow, these two candidates stink. Somebody's got to get me a better option. And now, think about this time. This time, it's going to be so... I feel like the effects will be plenty magnified. Because we will... I think there'll be so many Republicans who wouldn't deign to vote for Joe Biden or Donald Trump and will absolutely vote for the Libertarian candidate because, I mean that's what it is, you know? I mean, no, the reason in 2016 we got so many votes is a little different because it was because, well, there was Donald Trump and who, you know, was a problem. And then there was Hillary Clinton who was just so awful in every possible way. So people voted for the Libertarian candidate, and he attracted attention, Gary Johnson. And this year, you're going to have a Trump-Biden rematch, which nobody really wanted to see. Kind of like the 49ers and the Chiefs in the Super Bowl this past 2 weeks. and I think we're going to get significant defections from the Republican Party and people from the – honestly, from the Democrats. Because going into this election, do you really want your only two options to be Joseph Robinette Biden and Donald John Trump? Not me.
I mean, let's see whether or not Chase Oliver can remember where Aleppo is. I have faith in him.
I think he can do better than Gary Johnson.
I mean, it really will be interesting to see because, I mean, this is a race of many third-party candidates. You have probably the most high-profile one being Robert Kennedy Jr., son of RFK, nephew of JFK. And funny enough, RFK was looking at getting the Libertarian nomination. That I'm curious what you think there about that. If you know, we have a high profile candidate looking to run on the Libertarian ticket, but many Libertarians have criticized this move because he has many stances which could be considered not exactly Libertarian. But you know, this would obviously bring a much greater vote share to the Libertarian Party if it were to be a choice that the Libertarian National Committee takes on. I'm curious what you think about that.
Well, see, the thing is, I'm not totally aware of all of his political standpoints. I know he's making moves. I know he's going out there. That Super Bowl ad, very good. But
if they got the motion tracking on the pictures down right, it would have been better. They did. I saw someone pointed out they forgot to erase Vote Democratic on the one of the posters in the video. So like you could see like amongst the like Vote Kennedy was like a Vote Democratic in there, and it was it was like, you know, I feel like they could have, if you're going to spend $7 million on a Super Bowl ad, you might as well try to be a little more careful with how you put it together.
No. Come on. I'm not fully familiar with his policies only because I don't hear them enough. I know there's this narrative of the vaccine thing or whatever, and I don't even know like what to do with that, if that's true or not. I feel like it's supposed to hogwash, but we'll see. I think he's definitely not a traditional libertarian, but I think he certainly can make waves in this election. But I don't think attaching ourselves to him is compromising our values a little bit. And one thing I'm not willing to do is compromise my political beliefs for any candidate, because I know in the future our time will come. So it's not worth wasting it now and throwing it out the door. That being said, he's going to absolutely take away a vote share. I want to say the older demographic really, or no, wait, he's people under 35, right? Or something like that.
There's a particular demographic he's trending well with right now, but there's a lot of discussion about whether or not he's going to pull away from Democrats or Republicans more, which I'm curious what that would look like with Chase Oliver, for example. You know, where is he pulling away from? Is he kind of pulling more from disaffected Republicans, Democrats who are kind of just done with Joe Biden. Do you think that this kind of pulls back to libertarian appeal? Where do you think libertarians should message most? Where do you think their success is in trying to find a voter base?
Definitely disaffected Republicans, and certainly Democrats who are struggling with the way the modern party is going. Because there's a lot of people who have been Democrats that I know, and these have been Democrats since the 1960s, And that the Democrats of the 1960s are not the Democrats of today. And I think people get into this trap of, oh, I'm a Democrat, I'll stick with it. They don't exactly know what the Democratic Party means. But they're just rooted in believing that they want to vote for the Democratic Party.
Well, you'll walk into a booth, kind of close your eyes, and like put your finger on the Democrat, and just like check it off.
Yeah.
Forget about it.
I think genuinely that's what some voters do, and I think it's because they have this attachment, and that they hear all the messaging. Down with the Republicans, etc. So they feel that that's a part of what they have to do and whatnot. But in reality, they just don't know exactly what they're talking about. They don't realize that if they really took the time to examine it, they'd figure out more where they lie. I think we're missing out on the older demographic a lot, and certainly a good degree of young people who are disillusioned with the modern two-party system.
I mean, ultimately what it comes down to is messaging and outreach. You look at, again, let's look at one of the higher profile libertarian races of the past 2-3 years. Chase Oliver, again, in the Georgia Senate race. You have an opportunity where a libertarian and a Democrat were on the stage without a Republican. Herschel Walker just didn't show up to that debate. And regardless, there was an empty podium on the stage, and Chase Oliver was attempting to engage Raphael Warnock on the issues, but Warnock was debating the empty podium and debating Walker instead of debating Chase Oliver. And the lack of seriousness that he was given in that situation is concerning to me. If libertarians are going to try to make a case for themselves, we need to find ways to be taken more seriously.
Absolutely. And the thing with that, though, is we have to be taken more seriously, but that means doing it with dignity. What Chase Oliver did on that stage was represent the Libertarian Party in a brilliant fashion and let the two squabbling other party candidates or podium and squabbling party candidate have it out. I think the way we win is through dignity, and I think we can absolutely do that with how Chase Oliver represented himself there. Absolutely.
I mean, it's a kind of just closing thoughts we can probably get into, because we are running into our last minute here. We'll end it on this. Favorite libertarian figure, libertarian movement figure, favorite candidate, speaker, what do you got?
I mean, libertarian candidate, like outwardly identifying with the Libertarian Party.
Libertarian Party, libertarian leaning.
I mean, I'd say Coolidge, but I don't want to steal it from you. I'll go with Gary Johnson. As much as he didn't know where Aleppo was, I thought he definitely had some good points and good representation for the Libertarian Party that we needed. And he did a good job, comparatively. Right.
Yeah, I mean, I'll always be a Goldwater guy, but Ron Paul's definitely someone that is still kind of prevalent in the movement, and we owe a lot to in the movement. But thank you so much for coming on today and talking a little bit about this, highlighting somewhere that we don't really hear too much about, outside maybe the Reason podcast or something like that. But listen, thank you so much for coming on. I appreciate you being here, and hopefully I'll have you on soon one day.
You should. Absolutely. Thank you so much. I really appreciate the chance to come on.
Yeah, well, listen, you all have a wonderful day. Take care. God bless, and I'll see you all.
Hello, I'm Dr. Ruth Westheimer. And if you listen to WRCT Pittsburgh, you know that in most cases, size does not matter.
My best friend, why tell all these lies? If you're trying to rile me, here's some free advice. Can't you pick on someone, someone more a fool? Not at all impressed, I find your antics cruel. She's gone, I don't believe you. She's gone, she should have deceived you. God, I won't believe that. She's run away with the yachting type. With the yachting type. We've been walking out for more than just a day. 2 years since we started. You know anyway. And you know I trust her so implicitly. She just wouldn't leave with anyone but me. She's gone, I don't believe you. She's gone, she should have deceived you. She's gone, I won't believe that. She's run away with the yachting type. Shh.
type?
Next door lives a lonely girl, quiet as a mouse. No, I want to take her out. I couldn't get her out of the house. She was a part of the television generation. She stays in the sea, falls for every TV pop who's cleaning up the street. When I got to ask that girl, she would come out and play. Poor thing, she would stop for words. All she could say was no why. She was a part of the television generation. Television generation queen. Television generation. Television generation. She's watching the late show. She's been missing football. She ever started the late night film. Oh, what can she do when she loves them all? Television generation queen. Rise the Bugs Bunny and double your money. Television generation smile. Television generation. Television generation. Backwater. I'm gonna try and make it better.
I found hope in the midst of an overwhelming situation.
Alcoholism is a disease that can affect any family. Everyone suffers, but there is help and hope at Al-Anon Family Groups.
Al-Anon gave me my life back. I'm a better father and husband.
Are you in an overwhelming situation because of someone else's drinking?
Al-Anon and Alateen can help.
Local and virtual meetings are available. Maybe one could work for you. Call 1-866-200-0033 or visit alanon.org/hope.
Another dimension, a dimension not only of sight and of sound, but also of mind. This is a dimension that few people enter, and from which even fewer return. There is a signpost up ahead. Your next stop, WRCT 88.3 FM stereo. It could be worse. You could be entering the Twilight Zone. But there are other alternatives.